Welcome to Teck Resources Q4 2017 earnings call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. This conference call is being recorded on Wednesday, February 14, 2018. I would now like to turn the conference call over to Fraser Phillips, Senior Vice President, Investor Relations and Strategic Analysis. Please go ahead.
Thanks very much, Patrick. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us for Teck's fourth quarter and full year 2017 results conference call. Before we begin, I'd like to draw your attention to the forward-looking information on slide two. This presentation contains forward-looking statements regarding our business. However, various risks and uncertainties may cause actual results to vary. Teck does not assume the obligation to update any forward-looking statement. With that, I'd like to turn the call over to Don Lindsay, our President and CEO.
Thank you, Fraser, and good morning, everyone. I will begin on slide three with some highlights from our fourth quarter and our year-end results, followed by Ron Millos, our CFO, who will provide additional color on our financial results. We will conclude with a Q&A session where Ron and I and several additional members of our senior team will be happy to answer any questions. Based on our solid operating results, we had record revenues and record cash flow from operations in 2017, and we are returning significant cash to shareholders. We paid $260 million in dividends in Q4, including our first supplemental dividend. We also committed to $230 million in buybacks through Q1 of 2018, of which $175 million was completed by year-end back in the 20s. Having achieved our debt reduction targets and with our substantial cash generation, our financial position is very strong. Our current liquidity is almost $5 billion, including $1 billion in cash and our unused $3 billion U.S. credit facility, which we had extended by 2 years to October 2022, more than a year after the construction period for QB2. Importantly, first oil was achieved at Fort Hills on January 27th. It's going very well. This is the culmination of the hard work of thousands of people since the project was sanctioned by the Fort Hills partners in 2013. We look forward to the ramp-up to full production and to the continued growth of our energy business. Fort Hills is a long-life asset that will generate significant value for our company for decades to come. I have to give a shout-out to Suncor. First oil on January 27th, just 4 weeks after the original target date that was established back in October 2013 when we sanctioned the project. To be able to achieve that when along the way we had the effects of the wildfires that shut the project down for several weeks, it's a pretty impressive accomplishment on Suncor's part. In addition, we are pleased to have been named as one of Canada's top 100 employers for the first time in 2017. Turning to our financial results on slide four, in the fourth quarter, revenues were $3.2 billion, and gross profit before depreciation and amortization was $1.7 billion. After adjusting for unusual items, adjusted EBITDA was $1.5 billion, and bottom line adjusted profit attributed to shareholders was $700 million or $1.21 per share. For the full year, we achieved record revenues of $12 billion and record cash flow from operations of $5.1 billion, thanks to continued strong prices for our products and to solid operating results despite some challenges during the year. This exceeds the record that we set in 2011 when commodity prices for both steelmaking coal and copper were significantly higher. It serves to reinforce the results of our ongoing focus on cost control and on optimizing production from our core assets. Most importantly, we set this record while also significantly improving our safety and environmental performance. As I mentioned earlier, our adjusted profit attributable to shareholders was $700 million or $1.21 per share in the fourth quarter, and details of the adjustments are on slide five. For the full year, adjusted profit attributable to shareholders was $2.6 billion or $4.45 a share. I'll now run through highlights by business unit, starting with copper on slide six. In the fourth quarter, production was higher than the same quarter last year as production improved at Highland Valley. For the full year, copper production was towards the top end of our guidance range. Cash costs net of byproduct credits were down $0.18 per pound from Q4 last year, driven by strong cash credits for byproducts. For the full year, we came in at the low end of our recent guidance range for net cash costs and below our original guidance range. Overall, we generated a significant increase in gross profit before depreciation and amortization in Q4. Also in the quarter, we settled the last of three labor agreements at Quebrada Blanca. Looking forward to 2018, we expect copper production to be slightly lower than last year, primarily due to lower grades at Carmen de Andacollo. We are working on options to improve throughput at Carmen de Andacollo to help offset those lower grades. For the following 3 years, from 2019 to 2021, we expect copper production to average 270,000 to 300,000 tons. We expect our net cash costs to be slightly higher in 2018 than last year, in the range of US$1.35 to $1.45 per pound. Please note that at Highland Valley, we are on track for continued recovery from the low-grade phase of the mine plan. We expect higher grades in production in 2018, but not at the level mined in Q4 2017, which will not be repeated this year. We'd be happy to address any questions you may have on this during the Q&A. Our zinc business unit results are summarized on slide 7, and as a reminder, Antamina's zinc-related financial results are reported in our copper business unit. Mined zinc sales at Red Dog were slightly ahead of our guidance for the quarter and are indicative of the ongoing tightness in the zinc concentrate market. We had shipped all of the available concentrate out of Red Dog before the end of the shipping season, so we are well positioned for sales in the first half of the year. Our mined zinc production was up 19,000 tons in the quarter. We increased the amount of Kaniak ore in Red Dog's mill feed plan to our original target of 20% in that quarter, and we expect to maintain that level through 2018. For the full year, we achieved our revised production guidance range. We are also pleased to note that Antamina set a new record for annual zinc production, which is particularly valuable in a tight market. Overall, gross profit before depreciation and amortization was up 4% from Q4 of 2016. Looking forward, we expect mined zinc production, including co-products from our copper business unit, to be at a similar level in 2018 at 645,000 to 670,000 tons. For the following 3 years, we expect mined zinc production in a range of 575,000 to 625,000 tons, excluding any potential life extension at Ponderay. We also expect to produce 305,000 to 310,000 tons of refined zinc at Trail operations in 2018, and then an average of 310,000 to 315,000 tons in the following 3 years. Please note that we have introduced guidance for net cash costs for mined zinc, which we expect to increase from 28 cents per pound in 2017 to 30 cents to 35 cents per pound this year, as we anticipate lower lead production in 2018. And I would like to remind everyone of the significant seasonality of our quarterly zinc operating costs, as discussed during our Red Dog site visit last September. Turning to steelmaking coal on slide 8. Steelmaking coal prices remain strong as synchronized global growth is shifting the market from a supply-driven to a demand-driven market. Demand for seaborne coal is growing, especially in India, as well as in Europe, Vietnam, and Brazil. For the fourth quarter, our average realized price came in at US $170 per ton, which was at the top end of our guidance range. As we had flagged in Q3 and in our steelmaking coal guidance press release in December, we had a one-time shift in our product mix to a higher proportion of non-premium steelmaking coal products in Q4. We had record material movement for the full year and have now restored operational flexibility, and we have returned to our traditional product mix in Q1 of 2018. Q4 sales were down compared with the record quarterly sales in Q4 of 2016. They were negatively impacted by two CP mainline derailments in November, and underperformance at West Shore. For the full year, production came in below our guidance range at 26.6 million tons. Costs were in line with guidance, and with site costs of $52 per ton and transportation costs of $37 per ton. We are generating significant cash flow from our steelmaking coal operations. Full year gross profit before depreciation and amortization was $1.8 billion higher than in 2016. Looking forward, steelmaking coal sales are expected to be 6.3 to 6.5 million tons in Q1, reflecting underperformance at West Shore in January. It is worth noting that the outlook for Q1 pricing is strong, and the current rolling average for the quarterly index at $238 US per ton, with only 2 weeks left in the quarterly pricing period. We expect production to stay at a similar level to last year in 2016, at 26 to 27 million tons. We expect higher site costs in 2018 at $56 to $60 per ton, reflecting additional mining development activity with the closure of Coal Mountain, and we expect lower transport costs at $35 to $37 per ton. Looking at our energy business unit on slide 9, I mentioned earlier that Fort Hills achieved first oil on January 27th. The first of three trains from secondary extraction is producing and ramping up production. The second and third trains are mechanically complete and are expected to be commissioned in the first half of 2018. Overall, Fort Hills is on track to reach 90% of nameplate capacity of 194,000 barrels per day by the end of 2018. The partners also resolved their previously announced commercial dispute. Suncor and Teck have each acquired an additional working interest in Fort Hills from Total. Depending on the final project cost and our funding elections, we expect our interest will ultimately increase to approximately 21.3%. Looking forward, 2018 is a commissioning and ramp-up year. Based on our estimated working interest and Suncor's guidance for Fort Hills, we expect our share of production to be between 7.5 million and 9 million barrels of bitumen in 2018. And of note from an environmental perspective is that the life cycle carbon intensity for the Fort Hills product is projected to be lower than approximately half of all the oil currently refined in North America. Suncor also expects an average cash operating cost of $35 to $40 per barrel in 2018, with a declining trend throughout the year to $20 to $30 per barrel in the fourth quarter. As we have outlined on slide 10, we have a strong track record of returns to shareholders with $4.1 billion in dividends and $1.2 billion in buybacks from 2003 to 2017. We have paid out 27% of our free cash flow and dividends over the past 15 years. In December, we paid our first supplemental dividend under our new dividend policy of $230 million. This is in addition to our annual base dividend of 5 cents per quarter. We also committed an additional $230 million to the repurchase of Class B shares through March 31st, of which $175 million was completed in the fourth quarter. And this reflects Teck's strong free cash flow generation over the last 12 months and the strong outlook for our business. It also reflects disciplined capital allocation, balancing shareholder returns and CapEx with prudent balance sheet management. In addition to returning capital to shareholders, we are pursuing a number of growth opportunities as outlined in slide 11. We are focused on advancing our growth projects in 2018 to create additional value for shareholders. In energy, as I just mentioned, Fort Hills has achieved first oil and is ramping up production through 2018. Milestones will be reached in the first half of 2018 when the two remaining trains and secondary extraction start up. In copper, our 50-50 joint venture with Goldcorp, called Nueva Union, is advancing that project's pre-feasibility study, which we expect to complete this quarter. QB2 is our most advanced project, and we are currently focused on completing the regulatory approval process and advancing detailed engineering, early procurement contracts, and construction planning. The permit is expected in the first half of the year, and a sanctioning decision is now not expected before the second half of 2018. We are also making progress on Project Satellite. The two most advanced of the five projects are Zafranal and St. Nicholas. At Zafranal, the feasibility and the SEIA studies are underway in support of development permit application and completion of a feasibility study in Q4 of 2018. A substantial field program, including extensive community engagement activity, is well underway. At St. Nicholas, environmental and social baseline studies were initiated in Q3 of 2017, and we also have a drill program starting this quarter. We aim to complete the pre-feasibility study and submit an SEIA in the second half of 2019. 2018 looks to be an exciting year with a number of catalysts for value creation over the next 12 to 18 months. And now I'd like to turn it over to Ron.
Thanks, Don. I'm moving on to slide 12, and we summarize our fourth quarter changes in cash here. And as Don mentioned earlier, we set a new record for cash flow from operations for the full year, and that was reflected in the numbers for Q4 with $1.5 million in cash flow from operations. We spent $546 million on capital projects, including Fort Hills. We paid out $257 million in dividends to shareholders, including the first supplemental dividend of 40 cents per share in December, and that was on top of the regular base dividend of 5 cents per share. Our capitalized stripping costs were $178 million. We repurchased $175 million in Class B shares, and purchases are expected to continue in Q1. We paid $160 million in expenditures on our financial investments, and we paid $95 million in interest and finance charges. And after these and other minor items, we ended the quarter with cash and short-term investments of around $952 million. And as noted on an earlier slide, we had earlier slides in previous quarters, we had settlement pricing adjustments, $39 million, and share-based compensation expense of $51 million on an after-tax basis. These items are included in other operating income and expense, and we've included the simplified models for estimating them in the appendix to this presentation. Looking at our liquidity on slide 13, we now have close to $5 billion in liquidity, and that includes about $100 billion in cash and our undrawn $3 billion committed credit facility. We also expect to receive another $1.2 billion in cash proceeds from the Waneta transaction, which is progressing but is now not expected to close before the third quarter of this year. And including the Waneta transaction, our strong credit metrics compare favorably to our diversified and North American peers on a pro forma basis. Moving on to the next slide, we've summarized our capital expenditures. Overall, our 2018 CapEx is expected to be slightly below last year. Sustaining capital is expected to be higher in 2018 with increases across the business unit. However, the increase is in part a one-time event, and sustaining capital is expected to decline again in 2019 and beyond, particularly in coal and processing and in zinc. The largest increase is in steelmaking coal, which is expected to have $275 million sustaining capital. $185 million is for the mining and processing equipment, largely related to reinvestment in our equipment fleets. Approximately $86 million is related to the water treatment, consistent with the guidance we provided last quarter. And we've provided additional detail on the Elk Valley water quality spending in this quarter's MD&A. For zinc, sustaining capital is higher as well, as we're advancing the number two acid plant at Trail, and we're doing a rebuild of the Kivset smelter, which is required every 4 years. Major enhancement capital is also expected to be higher. Coal largely relates to the development costs of new mining areas in Elk Valley. Copper is primarily the additional ball mill at Highland Valley to increase the grinding circuit capacity. And zinc is mainly the mill upgrade project at Red Dog, which is expected to increase average mill throughput by about 15% over the remaining life. Energy includes items such as tailing management, new mining equipment, and autonomous haul systems at Fort Hills. The new mine development is expected to fall by more than half as Fort Hills is completed and enters commercial production later this year. Energy includes expected spending at Fort Hills at our estimated interest of 21.3%, and it excludes any capitalized revenue or cost prior to commercial production, which we expect to achieve sometime in the first half of 2018. Copper includes spending on QB2 to get us to a position to make a sanctioning decision, with further guidance provided as the year progresses, as well as full-year spending for San Nicolas and our share of Zafranal. Capitalized stripping is expected to be lower, primarily driven by coal. You may recall that we were playing catch-up with stripping in 2017 as permits for new mining areas had been delayed, resulting in stripping work that we had originally planned to do in 2016 being delayed into 2017. And with that, I'll turn it back to Don for closing comments.
Well, thanks, Ron. And just wrapping up on slide 15, you know, 2017 was a pretty good year. It was an excellent year, really. And we're feeling pretty good about 2018, certainly off to a good start. We talk about synchronized global growth, and we've all heard a lot about that, but if you dig down a different level, you see that we have actually over 45 countries growing above trend, so this is very widespread growth. Most of us forget what this feels like, but it's certainly very good for commodity markets, and they are now demand-driven rather than supply-driven, which is a good thing. So we see continued strength in commodity prices, and tech is certainly well-positioned to take advantage that attractive market backdrop. We executed on the plan during the severe downturn. We have very good, solid operating assets, a proven track record of execution, and we're now enhancing profitability at all our operations. We have a very strong financial position with significant liquidity and record cash flow from operations. And our approach to capital allocation is certainly balancing returns to shareholders and capital spending with prudent balance sheet management. We are completely focused on generating shareholder value, and we believe that Teck offers a compelling value proposition to investors. So with that, we'd be happy to answer any of your questions. I would like to note that we have management team members calling in from different locations, so if there's a brief pause after you ask your question, it's just while we're figuring out who's going to answer it. So I'll turn it back to you, operator.
Thank you. If you're using a speakerphone, please lift your handset before making your selection. Please press star 1 at this time if you have a question. Please limit your inquiry to one question plus a follow-up question. After that, if you have further questions, please rejoin the queue. There will be a brief pause while the participants register for questions. Thank you for your patience. The first question is from Chris Terry from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my question. I just wanted to talk about the link between the balance sheet and where it's at now and how you think about QB2. Just maybe an update on how you're thinking about the ownership structure of QB2 now that your balance sheet's become significantly stronger and you originally said perhaps that you would look to have a JV partner. Are you still looking at, to do that on the JV side? And then just around the balance sheet, you've obviously said before, I think you want to get debt below $5 billion. What's the update there, just so that we can think about further share buybacks or how the capital return story might look throughout 2018?
Okay, well, starting with the last question first, we did target to get below $5 billion U.S. of bonds outstanding, and we achieved that earlier last year, so we're at $4.8 billion outstanding now. We have, this is very important, we have nothing due the rest of this year or 2019 or 2020, and then roughly 220 matures in 2021. So very clear runway during the period when we anticipate building QB2. With respect to QB2, it's fairly complex answer, so nothing definitive. First, we haven't got the permit yet. So we need to get to that point. We are aware that the smaller shareholder private company in Chile is likely to sell, and so I suspect something will happen between now and year end, but that's the kind of thing that you can't see anything definitive until you actually see it. It's a 13.5% position. Thereafter, we are going to go more slowly on QB2 in terms of sanctioning and take our time. There's three good reasons for that. The first is that it allows us to continue to build cash on the balance sheet, and certainly at these prices, we're going to build cash. It looks like a very good environment. It also allows us to get Juanita closed, the $1.2 billion coming from that, and we anticipate that happening in Q3, hopefully at the beginning of Q3. But so we really want to be past that and be able to demonstrate to the market that in terms of any sort of financial risk related to QB2, that we'd be starting with, you know, over $3 billion in cash is quite likely, that we'd have the U.S. $3 billion credit line that's already been extended to October 2022. We've had lots of interest from banks, like an awful lot of interest from banks in terms of project financing. So if we waited to, you know, our September board meeting or later, we'd be able to show a really, really strong financial situation before sanctioning QB2. The second reason would be it would allow the engineering completion to get to a higher level. Currently, I think we're in the high 50s, and we'd like to get that to 75 or even 80%, because that makes a big difference in terms of level of certainty and completion of engineering drawings when you go out for bids on different aspects of the project, and that reduces execution risk, so that's an important part of it. And also allows us to continue working with Bechtel, our EPCM manager, and putting together our execution team. We're very fortunate in terms of the timing of this project. QB2 is the largest, most advanced project in Chile, and there are a lot of really good people available, so sometimes you get lucky. And then the third reason is that we anticipate, as we get closer to the end of 2018, that we'll get that much closer to when a significant structural deficit in copper opens up, and we'll see strong performance. And so I think that will demonstrate to the world that this is a project that's really needed. When we get to that point, we anticipate putting a couple of teams of people with a range of skills on each team to go out and speak to all of our shareholders in great detail about why this project makes sense and it will be very competitive on the global cost curve, particularly on the AISC, all-in sustaining costs, which is a key factor because QB2 will have very, very low sustaining capital relative to the major well-known mines out there. So I know it's a long answer, but hopefully that addresses the question.
Okay. So thanks, Don. And just one last one from me. The CapEx profile you provided in 2018, I guess you've gone through some one-off items there on equipment and the move to Coal Mountain, or the move away from Coal Mountain, and so the CapEx has come back up. How do we think about some of those one-off items, or how would 2019 to 2020 shape up on the sustaining CapEx front? Do we look at 2018 as being a high level a year and 2019 would normalize, or is 2018 sort of a base load that we should think about for 2019 and beyond?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that question. It's a good one. I'm going to turn over to Robin Sharmeta because it's most visible in coal, but then Dale will comment on copper and zinc after.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks, Don. The sustaining capital on operating equipment will peak in 2018, so you'll see that decline over the next 5 years. So we're about $185 million that we plan on spending primarily on shovels and trucks, some plant upgrades. And as I say, that'll decline over the five-year period to around $70 million. So you could look at an average across 5 years of around $125 million for sustaining capital on equipment. And then the sustaining capital on water is pretty much what we talked about in the previous guidance. So it's the $86 million here in 2018, and then the $850 to $900 across the five-year period. So roughly $200 million a year, 2019 out for the remaining 4 years of that stretch.
And Dale, on copper and zinc?
Yeah, I'll start with copper. Copper is really being driven this year primarily by one-off items, including equipment replacement, as well as the D3 ball mill project at HVC. A more normalized sustaining capital range for copper would be in the 150 range, and we expect that basically from 2019 out. And on the zinc side, it's really being driven by the acid plant. It's a very abnormal year in 2018. It's being driven by the acid plant completion, as well as the KIVCET rebuild, which is once every 4 years, as Ron mentioned. So a more sustaining long-term run rate for capital for zinc would be in the 125 range. We would expect that in 2019 going forward, at least in the second half of 2019 once the acid plant is done.
Okay, thanks for the detail. Appreciate it, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Aris Warkoda from Scotiabank. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. I was looking for if we get some more color on the coal business. First of all, in terms of your coal guidance for cost this year of 91 and 97 a ton, obviously that's up from 17 levels. Should we think about that as the new run rate going forward beyond 2018, or is there reason to think that could come down in the future, 1920, with higher volumes and, I guess, lower transition costs around Coal Mountain and, I guess, net of water treatment costs? How should we think about that?
Back to Robin.
Yeah, you bet. Now, I'll walk you through a little bit of the detail because there's a number of different factors at play. So, as you mentioned, Coal Mountain will shut down. And Coal Mountain is a very low strip ratio, very low operating cost mine, and it will be replaced by the other four operations in the valley, the tonnage associated with that. So Fording River, Green Hills, Lion Creek, and Elkview. And as you know, we've been developing the new areas that will make up that tonnage. Those areas are higher strip ratio. They've got longer waste and coal hauls. And so if you look at the combined effect of the strip ratio and haul distance, it's going to add around $2 a ton to our costs. That strip ratio, though, over the next 5 years will come back down. So 2018 is a peak at about 10.5. That's versus the 10.2 we saw in 2017. But it comes back down to about 10.1 over the next 5 years. So that's one thing that will mitigate some of those costs. I guess the other factor in 2018 that's in our cost this year that isn't normal is we've got a what you call a cycle peak in maintenance costs. So We purchased much of our truck fleets in the 2010 to 2012 period. And because you've got around, 50 haul trucks that were all purchased around the same time, they're all about the same age. And with a fleet like that, you have major components, and engines is one significant component that comes due for replacement around this time. So we'll see that cycle kind of flow through this year. We'll do the work we need to do on that fleet. And then those costs will come back down to something more normal forward. I think a couple things to kind of take note of. Productivities are at their highest levels ever now. So we're seeing through December, January, record productivity. So that plays well for our costs. As I said, strip ratio does come down. The equipment fleet's actually still relatively young. So we haven't even reached midlife on the majority of our equipment fleet. So as soon as this cycle kind of flows through, we should be in good shape on the equipment fleet. And then the other key point is, as we transition from Coal Mountain to the other operations, the average coal quality should shift higher in terms of, marginal shift towards a harder coking coal type quality, and that's going to affect the revenue in a positive way. So there are offsets to the costs. So hopefully that helps. That's a few of the pieces that are at play.
But it sounds like they might trend down to more just the bottom end of that range for 18. It doesn't sound like they're going materially below kind of the $90 level. Is that the right way to think about it?
No, not at all.
Yeah.
That's the right way to think about it.
Okay.
Yeah. And the other side of it is, you pointed out, I'll just give you another positive. as I said, we are transitioning from Coal Mountain, and we will see our production start to strengthen, so that's going to help with costs as well.
Okay. And in terms of the coal realization, I mean, we're, halfway through Q1, as Don mentioned, the index price is only 2 weeks away from being set. Should we anticipate, it's been a high price environment in this 3 months. Should we anticipate Teck realizing something close to its sort of historical realization percentage in the kind of 92-93%, or could this be an unusually low quarter just given the high price environment?
So I'm going to turn that over to Rael in a minute, but I just wanted to make 2 points. One is to emphasize something that Robin said about the transition from Coal Mountain to the other mines in the valley. As we go to the other four mines with higher quality product, well, there will be higher costs relative to Coal Mountain. Robin mentioned the $2 related to haul distance and strip ratio. The increase in price realization we get for the higher quality coal will be significantly higher than that couple of bucks. We can't give you an actual number because there's a range of products and the spreads between the highest quality products and other products has been changing quite significantly, which we all talk about. But we know for sure that the increase in price that we receive will be significantly higher than the increase in cost. So to the extent that people still care about our financial results, this should be positive. And with that, back to Rael.